So very few people, I promised to tell the only storage joke. Storage is not funny, unfortunately. But so Amy and I went to college together. And we also knew this other guy, Josh. And Josh was a Mac geek. Back when being a Mac geek was like really terrible, because Mac OS was really terrible. And one day he came into the room and he said, "Awesome, virtual memory. Now I can have a really big RAM disk." And that's, unfortunately, a true story, and also, unfortunately, the only storage joke. So I'm here to talk about something that is actually funny, but funny sad, and that is storage over Ethernet. I've been a storage guy for a really long time, unfortunately. I used to be a sysadmin, and then I got too involved with the big EMC systems that we bought, and ended up going over and focusing only on storage. So I've literally been focused entirely on storage for 10 years, which is really 10 years wasted, I'll tell you. But recently I quit my job, and now I don't even do anything. I work for no man. I run GestaltIT.com, which is a cooperative of bloggers, and I run Foskett Services, which is my own consulting services. I was very clever when I named it. Come on, that's pretty good. So you know, Henry Ford had a company before it was called Ford, and he named it the Ford Motor Company, and we left. They wouldn't let him use his own name for his next company. Seriously, isn't that bizarre? So I'm in big trouble when I sell out to the man, because then I won't be able to use my name on anything. So I gotta warn you, this is my sad cheerleader. I'm not here to cheerlead anybody. I don't work for anybody. And I'm not going to stand up here and say, you know, go fiber channel over Ethernet because all the big guys want you to believe in it. Because, I mean, I don't care. No skin off my back if nobody uses it. In fact, I'm not going to say, you know, rah-rah about anything. My general rule of thumb is that if I know about something personally, if I've got experience about it, then I'll say something about it. But if I don't know about it, I'm just going to say, I don't know. Because I'm not some magical guy that knows stuff. I just happen to have used some things before and happen to have run storage and looked into this stuff. So while I'm going through this, if you've got something to add, I would really love it if you would, I don't know, just shout. Because I don't really know all the facts. I'm just trying to figure it out, just like you. One of the reasons that I love doing presentations like this is because it gives me an excuse to look into things. So I literally spent weeks like poring through the specs for all these ridiculous add-on protocols that they're putting in for data center bridging. And I contacted the vendors and talked to them about how this stuff works. And my big question was, why? But I learned about it. And that's why I wanted to do this talk, because I knew that I wanted to learn about this topic. So let's hope I learned something. Now, convergence is, I guess, the marketing topic that we're talking about. The idea that rather than having, you know, 8 different protocols, each with their own wire coming out of the back of your server, that you would have maybe 1 wire, or maybe 2 wires if you're not a total idiot. And that you could share those wires with multiple protocols, and that you could run things like storage and networking and a cluster heartbeat and whatever other crazy things you want to run. And this all comes from this general convergence that we're seeing in the industry. I mean, one of the big topics in storage, again, I'm going to say that a lot because I'm a storage guy, one of the big topics in storage right now is commodity hardware. People finally realized that designing specialty weird hardware was basically a recipe for disaster, because you may perform really, really well right now, but 5 years from now, Intel's going to catch you. And then you're not going to perform that well, and you're going to have an inflated bill of materials. So everybody's working on the assumption that Intel will give us all the CPU power we need. And so far, Intel's been able to do that. So Intel's CPUs is one area that really is driving this commoditization of the storage industry. it's also driving this convergence. Another thing that's happening is the rise of open systems. Now, I'm a Unix guy. I don't own a PC. I don't run Windows. But I'm actually a Microsoft MVP. So I actually got to sit across the table with Steve Ballmer with my MacBook in Redmond. And so they recognized me as being a storage MVP because I was able to say nice things about what they were doing. Because let me tell you, the truth is that Microsoft storage people are doing awesome stuff that you probably don't know, like having an open MPIO driver that's extensible and having the best iSCSI software initiator out there. But nobody gives them any credit for it because everything else they do sucks. So unfortunately, these guys labor away in obscurity. But they decided to give me an award for that. And so I will say a couple of nice things about Windows, but it's only the things that they deserve. So open systems is on the rise. Rather than using real-time OSs and specialized embedded OSs, a lot of folks are using Linux, using BSD now to run storage. In fact, most of the new storage devices are built on Intel reference designs and BSD or Linux. And finally, the other big thing that's happening is IP and Ethernet. Obviously, IP has taken over the world. Ethernet followed. About 15 years ago, I worked for a company called Freecom. And I worked there after Metcalf worked there, but I actually got to meet him once. And he said, in the future, what are networks going to look like in the future? And he said, I don't know what they're going to look like, and I don't know what the protocol is really going to be, but it's going to be called Ethernet. And what he was saying was, this was at the time when we were transforming, when we were going from Ethernet to fast Ethernet. Remember when fast Ethernet was fast? And people were predicting that you couldn't do 100 megabits over just, twisted pair. You had to use multiple cables, or maybe you'd have to go to optical. And then we made the transition to gigabit Ethernet, and suddenly, instead of, anything related to the original Ethernet protocol, we basically redid it all except the frame format. And yet it's still called Ethernet, and it still maintains some kind of backward compatibility. Well, the same can be said of IP, right? I mean, our IP doesn't really have all that much to do with the IP of yesteryear. I mean, it does, but there's so much extra stuff in there that it's just kind of like a skeleton that's been built on. So IP and Ethernet are taking over, but what they look like is like something new. And I guess you could say the same for all these things. I mean, Unix doesn't have that much to do with the Unix that we were learning 20 years ago. And, the Intel CPUs of today don't really have that much to do, thankfully there's no protected mode, don't really have that much to do with the CPUs that we had back then either. But all of these things are becoming the must-haves of IT. And so in the storage world, even though we're really ridiculously conservative and unfunny, we still are finally getting around to converging on Intel, Unix, and IP and Ethernet. And that's what this talk is about, Ethernet and storage. So convergence is happening for a few different reasons. First, there's this virtualization thing. Have you guys heard about this? Oh my gosh. As a storage guy, what a pain this thing is. Everything we have is optimized for sequential I/O. And then along comes this thing that just chops it up and randomizes it. It's terrible. It's the biggest driver of storage, though, right now. In fact, enterprise storage companies love virtualization because it means that they can sell lots of SAN gear. And high-end storage companies are loving it because it means that they can preach this message of virtualization, this message of consolidation and converged networking, and they can sell a lot of high-end SAN gear. So this is something that's happening and something that's hitting us, and it's driving convergence and it's driving consolidation on these platforms, on Intel. And when I say Intel, I mean AMD also, on Unix and on Ethernet. We're also getting a lot of consolidation from a port count perspective. A lot of my friends are network guys. They're somewhat funnier than storage. And they're really, really driven to figure out how to deal with the spaghetti problem. and to figure out how to, you know, they're just as befuddled by virtualization as storage people are. Because again, you think that you plug this cable into this machine, and suddenly the machine that you thought you were talking to is over there, and you didn't move the cable. It's like, how'd that happen? Of course, they're Ethernet guys, so they just pull the cable out and just walk over here and plug it in. You know what would happen if you did that to a storage network? Man, those guys don't know how lucky they've got it. And then the final thing is performance, right? We're getting all these applications that are really driving a lot of performance. And performance in different ways, too. It's not the same old kind of performance. It's not the same old, same old. You know, we've got applications that demand massive numbers of files, or massive file sizes, or massive throughput, or very short latency, or crazy, crazy random reads or random writes. We get all these different things, and we've got to figure out how to deal with it, which means that we've got to step up our game. Now, for a long time, we've been using this fiber channel thing. And basically, we hummed along at, you know, 1 gigabit. Then we bounced it up to two gigabits. I actually remember I used quarter speed fiber channel on Sun System back when I worked at US Robotics, of all crazy companies. I remember that, but that was even to the left of this chart. And actually, no, it wasn't. It was right about the beginning of the chart. Anyway, so we've been ramping up fiber channel, and this looks pretty good, doesn't it? If we project into the future, and if we believe them that they're going to go to 32 gigabit. But this is actually not all that fast, because, oops, there's Ethernet. And what's Ethernet doing? What's going faster? That's kind of a problem for us storage guys, because we were so used to being able to say, well, we can write, you know, 100 megabytes per second. What can you do? Oh, well, we can write 200 megabytes per second. What can you do? And suddenly the storage guys say, I can write a gigabyte per second. What can you do? And we have to say, well, we can't quite do that. We'll do that soon. So if this was at all legible, you would be able to see that these two lines are different colors. They're different colors on my screen. So I'm going to enjoy it, and you guys can just play along. The higher line is the Ethernet line. What we're seeing here is we're seeing Ethernet go from 1 to 10 to 40 to 100. Well, 100 gigabit Ethernet is really freaking fast. And the fiber channel guys are talking about maybe 32 gigabit Ethernet, or fiber channel, 32 gigabit. So that's really freaking fast too, but it's not as freaking fast. So that's going to kind of cause us to think about, well, maybe we should use that stuff instead of this stuff that we're developing. So this is really the genesis of storage over Ethernet. It's maybe we should try to figure out how to leverage the economies of scale that are going on over there. And so what's happening is we've got storage protocols emerging that are kind of hitching onto the other wagon instead of sticking with the fiber channel wagon. The first one, obviously, that a lot of people know about was the NAS protocols way back when. Anybody remember the silver filer from NetApp, or the purple one, or the yellow one? That's when they had some class and some style. Now they all just look boring. But I didn't even put it on the chart. We've also got iSCSI. Anybody using iSCSI? Yeah, I love iSCSI. And I love it because it works, and it's cheap. And it's fast, too, as we'll talk about in a minute. So iSCSI came along, hitched onto the gigabit Ethernet bandwagon, and works great, especially with the
Microsoft
software initiator. It works awesome. And so iSCSI hitched on. Now we've got fiber channel over Ethernet hitching on. And we've got parallel NFS hitching on. And we've got these protocols kind of jumping on the bandwagon. And fiber channel, unfortunately, is going to be left behind. And so eventually, we're going to be using storage over Ethernet, whether it makes any sense or not. So then there's this other thing called InfiniBand. Anybody using InfiniBand? Well, InfiniBand is already faster than all this stuff. But we're going to pretend that it doesn't exist, because that's pretty much what the industry is going to do. And eventually, InfiniBand won't exist, because the industry is going to pretend it doesn't exist. But if you're using it, you're totally right. It's totally better than anything we're talking about. So one of the things that always held iSCSI back, I mean, what do you know about iSCSI if you don't really know anything about iSCSI? You know that it's insecure, that it's cheap, and that it's slow, right? And what do you know about fiber channel if you don't know anything about fiber channel? You know that it's fast, and it's secure, and it's expensive. So they're basically two sides of totally different coins because they have nothing in common. Well, amazingly enough, iSCSI is really, really fast. Recently,
Microsoft
and Intel demonstrated wire speed 10 gigabit iSCSI. And when I say wire speed, I mean 1100 megabytes per second, not even a gigabyte per second. 1100. They actually went further than a gigabyte per second. They were actually pushing right up to the theoretical throughput limit of 10 gig Ethernet. Fibre Channel isn't anywhere near that, not even on a percentage basis, let alone on an actual throughput basis. And you want to know something else they did? They also pushed 1 million IOPS over iSCSI on one 10 gigabit Ethernet channel. You know how they did it? One client and 10 storage arrays. Because no storage array could handle it. How does that make me, Mr. Storage, feel, right? Suddenly my protocol, my precious high-performance storage that I love so much, none of them could handle the throughput of a single Windows server. Makes me want to kill myself. But what this means is this means that Ethernet actually works as a storage mechanism. Now, you're not going to be stupid enough to push 512K IOs in order to get 1 million IOPS. And you're probably never going to hook a server up to 10 storage arrays in order to get wire speed over 10 gig Ethernet. But it works, and it kind of has a future. So we have to think about it. We have to take it seriously. But there are benefits beyond speed. It's not just about pushing throughput. Ethernet makes a lot of sense for other reasons as well. There's the connectivity aspect. There's the fact that we don't have to learn all these bizarre, arcane things. I actually was working on my CCIE before I got into storage. And when I went to the original Fibre Channel classes, and I was learning about, you know, Gadzooks and Brocade and these companies like that, and they were telling me, you know, in the future, we'll be able to hook two switches together, you know? And I'm thinking, what's wrong with these people? Why did they invent an entirely new network protocol? Why did they have to reinvent everything when Ethernet is already doing these things? Well, that's kind of the story of Fibre Channel, isn't it? Reinventing everything again and again and again. Because, you know, why? Because they just couldn't learn from things? Well, I guess that's the story of open systems, too. Apparently, the open systems crowd couldn't learn anything from the mainframe people. And then there's the virtualization people, this whole virtualization problem. The fact that my server can disappear from here and reappear over there and not have shut down because the image can move live. Now, that's crazy stuff. But let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about connectivity. This is an example of a typical server. Now, this is actually pretty typical, isn't it? Four Ethernet ports for connectivity. You only got a cable into one of them, but, you know, you got four of them on there. You know, you got a cluster, you know, you got to have to have your cluster communication. You have to have your Fibre Channel storage ports on here. You know, maybe you've got a couple ports. You know, it's not unusual to have a typical server have this many ports on the back. But this is a problem when you're talking about blade servers. Because how do you fit all these cables into that little tiny space? This is a problem when you're talking about 1U servers. This is a problem when you're talking about pretty much any of the modern servers. Because it doesn't make any sense to have all this I.O. when all you need is literally a couple of 10 gig ports, and you can run all this traffic over it and still have, you know, 6 gigs extra capacity. That's pretty cool. And it eliminates a lot of the spaghetti problem that server people have been fighting with. I was recently talking to a company at a trade show. I don't remember, some trade show that I was at. They make this, like, cool structured wiring solution where they kind of bond all the cables together, and then they come out, and then they fan out into this thing that you can kind of plug in, and it plugs in, like, 20 ports at a time, and it's got a really thin cable. And you know why they do that? Because all these cables are interfering with airflow. I mean, it's crazy that we have so many cables on the back of our servers that the servers can't even breathe. We're literally strangling them. So this makes sense to me. As a data center guy, I'm down with that. I don't want to plug six cables into one machine. especially because then I have to stock all the patch cables and everything, and I'm done making my own cables. So we got to think about that. We also have to think about this whole interchange idea. One of the smart LAID server vendors came up with this idea that the server shouldn't have any personality of its own. It's just hardware, and the personality resides somewhere else. So you can pull out the hardware and put in a new one, and it's still the same server. That's pretty much the same thing that the virtualization people are doing as well, that you can move a system image, you know, moving a running system, and still have it be the same system. Well, this makes sense, but unfortunately, we can't really do that with conventional cables. We can't really, well, we can, but it doesn't make any sense to have to recable everything. For example, a friend of mine works at a company called Arista. They make switches, Ethernet switches. They're boring. But they have a cool feature that it watches the vCenter in VMware, and when you move a virtual machine with vMotion, it instantly moves all of the configuration personality from one port to another, or from one chassis to another across the network. So all the QoS settings and the VLANs and all that kind of stuff is just followed. That's cool. That's the kind of stuff that we need to do. But we can't do that in Fibre Channel. We can't do that very well in anything. It takes a lot of work to do that. So we need to kind of get moving on this, you know, convergence idea, just so that we can have this basic flexibility and mobility of machines. Then we also have to think about how things are happening in the data center as a whole. Another big topic in the networking world is this whole top of rack concept and extending the switches from the core right up to the top of the rack, and it's still like basically one switch chassis, or even the virtual switches where you extend the switch right into a virtual machine. This is a problem if you are dealing with legacy systems like Fibre Channel, and you have to start thinking about how am I going to have a new data center design? How am I going to set this thing up? Do I have to put my servers in a specific physical location just because that's where the cables are? All of these things are helped by converged technologies, and I'm down with that. I'm okay with that generally. Now, virtualization, like I said, is my nemesis. As a storage guy, it is my nemesis because it takes all this nice I/O that we've gone to spend, you know, 10 or 15 years optimizing storage arrays to handle, and it throws them in a blender. And so instead of getting a nice stream of predictable I/O where I can say, well, he looked at this block, so he's probably going to look at this block next, and then this one, and then this one, and then this one. And maybe he might even look at this one. It's just gone. It's out the window. All that stuff is gone. And the trouble is that disks are actually getting slower as a function of capacity, not faster. Basically, capacity is outrunning the interfaces that we've got. And so we've got to do all sorts of crazy things. We've got to have massive caches. We've got to have flash memory, all this stuff, in order to keep up with the I/O blender from virtualization. Like I said, we also have to worry about mobility of virtual machines. We have to think about, oh God, what happens if my virtual machine disappears from this HBA? You know, it's nice that I've got endport ID virtualization and I can actually have my Fibre Channel SAN connect to a virtual machine, but what happens if that machine suddenly appears over here? Well, that's a big problem for me. And so I've got to think about a lot of things. As I said, you know, some of the companies are coming up with virtualization-aware networks. There's different approaches toward how to make the network understand what server it's talking about. I'm actually going to speed right through this because this is not so storage focused, and I thought maybe I'd have a little extra time considering that I've got an hour and a half up here, but it takes me a while. I tend to use a lot of words. So let's jump right into it. Let's talk about data center Ethernet. What the heck is data center Ethernet? Now, I'm using the wrong term. It's actually called data center bridging. No, it's called converged enhanced Ethernet. No, it's called something else entirely. Well, what this is an attempt to make Ethernet suitable for uses that Ethernet was never suitable for. Basically, we're trying to get Ethernet to perform unnatural acts. Ethernet intends that the protocols above it will handle all those messy things like, oops, I lost your data. It intends that all that stuff is taken care of, because it always has been taken care of, because thank God we invented TCP. But now, we're running protocols that have the wrong assumption. SCSI assumes that the lower protocols aren't going to drop anything, and that there's not going to be congestion, and that, in fact, I'm just talking over a bus, and there's no network there at all. Fibre Channel made some sense because it was engineered to handle this lossless, demanding application called SCSI. Well, unfortunately, Ethernet was made not to handle that. So we've got to do things to Ethernet. We've got to twist it and torture it and turn it into something it's not supposed to be, just so that it can handle storage traffic. And so what we've done is we've come up, and when I say we, I mean everybody but me, has come up with a few different protocols here in order to make Ethernet kind of work for storage traffic. We're going to talk about these in detail. From the left, we've got flow control. What does this do? This makes Ethernet not lose packets, which is a very important thing and a very novel concept for Ethernet. Next, we've got bandwidth management. What does this do? This makes one thing going over Ethernet not screw with other things going over Ethernet, over the same, you know, the same port, the same switch, the same cable, whatever. Then we've got congestion management. And what does congestion management do? Well, congestion management is like XLAX for your Ethernet. It tries to keep the stuff flowing, because flowing is much better than straining when you're talking about Ethernet. You know, we got to try to make sure that data is going through easily and smoothly in order to get the best performance out of it. If we can do all these things, we can make Ethernet pretend to be a real, decent channel protocol, and we can put SCSI traffic over it. We actually don't need to do all these things. We actually only need to make it lossless in order for it to technically, theoretically handle SCSI traffic. The trouble is that once you put SCSI traffic over it, you're going to wish you had these other things too. So we're really going to kind of need to do all these things in order to make Ethernet suitable. So let's talk about them in detail. My friends at EMC said that I could use this beautiful flow control picture here. Ethernet already has a flow control mechanism, but it's about the worst possible flow control mechanism you could think of. It's called pause. Imagine you're talking to me in German. Now, I haven't taken German since I was in college with Amy, so I don't really get it. But if you speak slow enough and use small words, I might be able to understand you. But if you start going, na 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 na, I'm going to say, hold up there, just a second. I got to look up that word. That's basically pause. That is, in a nutshell, 802.3x. It says, this Ethernet station is talking to this Ethernet station, and this one just can't handle it. Maybe it's an endpoint on a storage array that's, you know, the buffers are full. Maybe it's a switch that is designed like all Ethernet switches and can't actually handle the theoretical throughput that it can supposedly handle. Maybe it's a host that is really slow. So what he's going to do is he's going to say, stop. And then the traffic will stop until he can catch up, and then he's going to say, okay, you can go now. Well, that's pause. As you can imagine, pause is almost entirely unsuitable for any use, but especially for storage traffic, because storage really doesn't like stopping, especially for what can amount to whole seconds in some cases in practical applications. So instead, what we've got is priority flow control. Priority flow control basically says we're gonna allow that stop message to apply to only one class of service. So if we have a switch that can handle it, and if we have an initiator and a target that can handle it, and if we have set up our classes of service, we can say, this one guy here that has the stop on it is talking too fast. So I'm going to tell him to stop, but everybody else can keep speaking. This is very important in a converged network, as you can imagine, because who is it that's talking too much? Is it the storage? Is it the server, or like the general network traffic? Is it maybe, you know, something else entirely? Maybe you're doing like DMA over Ethernet or something insane like that, and maybe that's what's speaking up so much. You don't want a problem with the storage to say stop and make your general purpose network stop. And you really don't want a general purpose network to just get flooded and say stop and make your storage stop, because that's going to crash your system. So instead, what we can do is we can just say stop to the storage, and we can let everything else run. If we do this, if we have priority flow control, which is flows off the tongue, ready? QBB, 802.1 QBB. If we have this protocol, we can run SCSI traffic, fiber channel over Ethernet, over this, because we know we will not lose any packets because we can say stop. It will run very poorly, but we can run it. This is the minimum necessary to run storage traffic over Ethernet of any sort, unless you have a smart protocol like TCP in the middle. iSCSI don't need this, because iSCSI has TCP. If iSCSI has a problem like this, it's just going to, TCP is going to take care of it. It was designed to handle Ethernet. Fiber channel, not so much. So we need this. But it's not really the best situation. This can handle a transient spike, but what if it's just a really busy network? What if there's an application that really is pounding I/O all the time? What's going to happen is it's going to say, stop, 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 like constantly. And that's what this is actually, that's the next one, the next slide. I've got a picture of that, of a network that looks like that, and that's a real big problem. And we've got another problem here, too. Some companies have decided that a way to handle this is to segment a 10 gig link. HP Virtual Connect, anybody using Virtual Connect? Good. No, Virtual Connect is not bad. It actually is really, really cool, because what it does is it takes a 10 gig link and you can give it a hard segmentation. And you can say, okay, I need 500 megs for this application, I need 2 gigs for this application, I need 3 gigs for this application. And it really does divide up the network, and it doesn't let this problem come up. This actually segments the network really, really nicely, and it allows I/O to flow according to its own issues. The problem is that it's also inefficient, because as you can imagine, most of the time, your heartbeat isn't using 500 megs. Most of the time, it's using like 1 or less. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to waste your I/O. And wasting I/O just annoys all of us, doesn't it? So wouldn't it be nice if we could reassign that I/O to somebody else that needed it? Right? Instead of giving the storage like 3 gigabits that it's going to flood and it's going to have these stops all the time, what if we could actually dynamically reassign that bandwidth based on the amount of available bandwidth? Basically, we're setting up quality of service. Well, that's what enhanced transmission selection. These are such great names, aren't they? 802.1 QAZ. That's what QAZ is. It allows you to dynamically reallocate these channels in a converged network to different applications. So you can have your storage burst all the way up to 10 gigabits if you want. You can have your network burst. You can have anything you want, you know, burst or slow or whatever. And you can set thresholds that, you know, I really want to reserve some space for this guy or whatever. The trouble is that servers really weren't meant to handle this. And basically, I'm sorry, switches. Basically, each end of the connection has to support this kind of stuff. So we also needed another thing. We needed a protocol that would let the switches talk to each other and say, hey, do you support this? Because if you support this, then I'm going to use it. And so we came up with another protocol, DCBX, Data Center Bridging Exchange, which allows the switches and the NICs to talk to each other and say, hey, I support this. Do you support this? I support this. We can use this. Okay, yeah, it's a date. And so that's what they're doing. And that's another protocol that's been grafted onto plain old 10 gig Ethernet. This is not required to support fiber channel over Ethernet. This is not even a glimmer in the eye of iSCSI or NFS. But it's a pretty good thing. And if you want to use fiber channel over Ethernet, you really ought to have this. It's recommended. Then there's this other thing. Because Cisco just couldn't leave well enough alone. So they've got burstable quality of service management, and they've got priority flow control. But they said, you know what? This is just terrible with all this stop, stop, stop. And this is actually Broadcom put this together. They were demonstrating this for SNIA. And what they did was they they were trying to show what happens if you actually send these pause commands out over a network that's being flooded, like, continually. So again, flow control is great if your network isn't always flooded. But if it's always flooded, it's just going to be stopping all the time. And of course, there's some latency there. It's kind of like a stoplight. Oh, it's even worse. You know when a cop is directing traffic, you know traffic gets all balled up because that guy is so slow and nobody knows what to do, and they're like, oh, I'm going to run him over. So they all just like slow way down, and then they stop too much, and they're not sure who goes. He's waving his hand. Does that mean I go? Well, that's pretty much what happens with flow control. The whole network gets balled up, and nothing works. And so they came up with this congestion notification system, and there's a bunch of different ideas for this. This is not standardized yet. This is kind of in the works. And theoretically, when it exists, 802.1 QAU will allow end-to-end traffic management. What that means is that means that this end of the network will be able to talk through the switch, through this other switch, through this other switch, to this end of the network and say, hey, you know what you need to do? Instead of sending me packets as fast as you possibly can, could you maybe throttle them to about 2 gigabits per second? All right, thanks a lot. And this is a demonstration down here on the bottom of what happens when you send that. So you do still have a pause. But after that, once the congestion is noticed and you know, the both ends are informed about it, it flows along nicely. And in real world, this kind of congestion notification, this kind of end-to-end congestion management makes networking work a lot better. You can double or triple your throughput in real world use by having something like this. If you could have something like this, which you can't because it doesn't exist. So if it existed, this would be awesome. But it doesn't. That's actually overstating it. A lot of companies are working on it. It's not here yet. This is part of the data center bridging standard, though. So when people say data center bridging, they include this, even though it doesn't exist. So when your vendor says, oh, you should definitely implement fiber channel over Ethernet, and we're 100% standards compliant, we support the entire data center bridging standard, what do you say? Oh, really? Tell me about your QAU implementation. How interoperable is that? Because it doesn't exist. Yeah, this is the problem. So the first guys exist and theoretically are interoperable. This guy, not so much. So what are we doing with this network? So now we've got a network that finally works. By the way, if we actually implement all these things, it really transforms Ethernet. Suddenly Ethernet is not just a terrible, awful protocol. Suddenly it really works, and you can really put actual decent payloads over it. So speaking of decent payloads, let's talk about SCSI. Now, SCSI was good in the 80s because we were using all sorts of terrible things. Remember when hard drives had their own like proprietary controllers that lived like in the computer? And the computer actually had to like have like an SD interface or ST506. ST506 was like, it's as if you took the hard drive controller off the hard drive and put it in the computer. It just made no sense whatsoever. But that's what we had. So somebody said, hey, you know what we should have is a standard protocol. Hey, thanks, Garth. And so we came up with one. It's called SCSI. Now, SCSI did all sorts of miraculous things beyond just making storage work with servers, which it did. It also enabled all sorts of stuff. It enabled the entire storage industry. The storage industry would not exist if not for SCSI, because suddenly we had a shared bus. Suddenly we could have multiple drives talking over one bus to one computer. We could even have two computers. And suddenly we kind of had a network. We could have external storage. I mean, man, this is my bread and butter right here. If it wasn't for SCSI, there would be no storage industry. And it pretty much came to dominate. I mean, today, basically everything except every computer in this room uses SCSI. And that's pretty cool. But SCSI has many faces. I don't know, I was trying to find a movie poster. Isn't there a movie poster here? The many faces of, but I couldn't find it. I guess I'm bad at Google. SCSI has many faces. When people say SCSI, they don't actually mean SCSI. They generally, when you say SCSI, you actually mean this ancient parallel SCSI over here on the left. And this is the OSI model. Man, can you imagine I worked this into the presentation? We talk about a piece of Anyway, so when we say SCSI, we kind of mean parallel SCSI. And when we say SAS, we mean SCSI over a totally different everything. But we're still using SCSI commands. So we can, it still is SCSI. And in fact, everything we talk about in enterprise storage is basically SCSI. Even InfiniBand, which I didn't put on here, I thought better of it. If we say iSCSI, well, what are we doing? We're taking SCSI over TCP, over IP, over Ethernet MAC, over Ethernet PHY. Or maybe not. Maybe we're running iSCSI over the internet, because we're totally crazy. Maybe you're doing what I did. The first iSCSI array I got, Left Hand sent me a demo before they released their product to try out. And I said, awesome. And I plugged a Linksys wireless router into it. And I plugged a Linksys wireless card into my notebook. And I like walked around, I've got a storage network, you know, because it's wireless. I mean, you can run SCSI over anything. You could probably run SCSI over a serial cable. You could probably run it over Token Ring if you wanted to. Well, iSCSI is just SCSI over whatever you want to run your I over. And thanks to TCP, it works. And thanks to some other work higher in the stack. Now, fiber channel, what is this fiber channel thing of which you speak? Fiber channel isn't fiber channel. Fiber channel is some of the lower layer transports that we can run SCSI over. So when people are setting up, iSCSI's bad because it's got all these layers. You know, since when are layers bad? You know, ogres have layers. Well, somebody's got kids. And, you know, fiber channel is basically SCSI over fiber channel. Because you can run other stuff. Did you know you can run IP over fiber channel? You want to see your storage administrator's head spin around? You know, you can run all sorts of stuff. A lot of people run DMA over fiber, well, not a lot, but a lot as defined as a very small portion of the entire installed base, but more than one person, runs DMA, memory mapping over fiber channel. You can do all sorts of cool stuff. FCOE is actually really, really similar to fiber channel, this thing we call fiber channel, in that it's SCSI over fiber channel over Ethernet, because there's still some fiber channel in there. So generally speaking, we can run any of these things over Ethernet. We can just have a few different ways to do it. So let's think about it. What are the pros and cons? Now, I decided to call it FCP to kind of call it out that this is the thing we call fiber channel over on the right here. And then we've got iSCSI and FCOE, which are basically the two main block protocols that you're going to run over Ethernet. What are the differences? Well, iSCSI can run over anything. Fiber channel over Ethernet requires these DCB extensions that I just spent way too much time talking about. That's a difference. And fiber channel protocol doesn't use them at all. iSCSI is routable. When people like to complain that iSCSI is insecure, what they really mean is iSCSI is routable. Fiber channel over Ethernet is also routable, but if you try to route it, you've got to do it at layer 2. And if you do that, your network guys are going to kill you. iSCSI, you can connect to anything. I've got iSCSI running on my iMac at home right now. I've got an iOmega iX4 running iSCSI to over plain old Ethernet with a D-Link hub. No problem at all. iSCSI, like I said, it'll run over a Wi-Fi card. Fiber channel over Ethernet really is never going to be used. I mean, Apple will never support this. They don't even support iSCSI. Again, software initiators, great. There are software FCOE initiators. You're not going to use them. You're going to use hardware. You're going to use something that the vendor supports. You know, again and again, you know, we've got guaranteed delivery. We've got flow control. We just spent a lot of time talking about that. These things have been around for a while. FCOE is totally brand new. So which should you use? To me, it's obvious. I would use the thing on the left or the thing on the right, and I don't know why I would use the thing in the middle. Maybe I'll use it in 5 years, but not right now. So let's talk about the thing on the left, which I love so much. iSCSI is basically where it's at. It works great. It's robust. It's mature. Yeah, sure, some products are not so good, but generally, they're pretty good. We've got iSCSI from every vendor you like and probably every vendor you don't like. We've got software targets. We've got all sorts of great stuff. Yes, Microsoft has a somewhat middling to pathetic iSCSI target. The other ones are a little better. On the client side, we've got great, great stuff. We've got iSCSI supported in basically every OS, as we're going to see here in a second, even the Mac. We've got a nice transition, too. The coolest thing about iSCSI that I've seen recently is the fact that in order to go to make the transition to 10 gig Ethernet, you don't actually have to write all these new protocols and buy all new equipment and still plug it into your fiber channel SAN like you do with FCOE. You can actually just plug in a new cable. It's like, wait, you mean it just kind of works? Yeah, of course, it works great. You just plug it in, you upgrade it. And you know what? Somebody had the bright idea that they said, well, yeah, TCP can handle packet loss, but what if we didn't have to? What if we could run iSCSI over these DCB extensions? What if we could use priority flow control and congestion notification? What if we could use all this stuff? That would be really cool, and that would make iSCSI run even better. And you know what? It does run even better. This is brand new. None of the initiators supported this until, like, literally this month. And then suddenly we're running iSCSI over DCB, and everybody's like, well, why didn't we do this before? So, you know, it's pretty good. It's certified for every OS. You've got initiators for every OS. You've got multipathing on every OS. You've got clustering on every OS that I know anything about anymore because I don't know anything about HP or IBM anymore. So it works great. Now, actually, on the clustering side, note that most iSCSI vendors don't really have a clue about clustering, and they don't support persistent reservations. So not every iSCSI array actually supports clustering, but some of them do. A good number of them do, and more are. So iSCSI is great. It performs. It works. That's a big one. It's cheap. I mean, literally cheap. Cheap enough for me to have it at home. That's pretty cheap. Now, of course, the one that I have at home barely works. You know, 25 megabytes per second for the win, you know? But theoretically, you could spend a little more and get a little bit faster system, and that would work too. And you could spend a lot more and get a crazy fast system. You could even do what Microsoft did. Why wouldn't you use iSCSI? I don't know. Maybe because you're only using 1 gigabit Ethernet and you need more performance. But didn't I just say you just plug in a different cable? Well, that's a con, I guess. Maybe because you've got a lot of Fibre Channel stuff or a bunch of Unix guys who really, really don't want to use Ethernet. You know, I was one of those guys. I really wanted to have my Fibre Channel infrastructure, and I didn't want to have, you know, some other protocol. So, honestly, I had a real trouble trying to figure out why you wouldn't use iSCSI at this point. But of course, I've been banging this drum for years. I've been, you know, saying how great it is for a long time. So let's talk about the other guy, Fibre Channel. Very zen, right? We've got instead of an eightfold path, we've got a threefold path. There's basically three ways that you can use Fibre Channel today. You can do end-to-end Fibre Channel, which is what you've kind of been doing for the last 15 years, meaning it all runs over Fibre Channel. It's all Fibre Channel end-to-end. You can try to have end-to-end FCOE, but you know what? There's like one product in one configuration that supports that. So despite what all the vendors are saying that, oh, FCOE is going to take over, it doesn't even exist because the DCB extensions don't exist, and nobody except like this one guy has like an Ethernet switch that'll actually do end-to-end Fibre Channel. So I think the NetApp people can actually figure out how to make end-to-end FCOE work, and everybody else, you gotta just bridge it from a Fibre Channel SAN. Wait a second, Fibre Channel SANs max out at 8 gigabits. So you're telling me I'm gonna hook 10 gigabit protocol into an 8 gigabit protocol? I'm not gonna get 10 gigabits out of that thing. You lied. They did. It's not a 10 gigabit protocol, it's an 8 gigabit protocol because you've got a bridge to Fibre Channel. Well, guess what? So most people are doing this middle thing if they're doing Fibre Channel over Ethernet at all, which is basically using it at the edge and then bridging it to 4 gig or 8 gig and wishing on a star that someday they'll have end-to-end FCOE. So FCOE, again, rolls off the tongue, is specified in this FCBB5. There's even a logo, because all the cool things have logos. And so what they did is they took the Fibre Channel logo. Did you know that that was the Fibre Channel logo? Because I've been studying this stuff for years, and I had never seen it in my life. But that's the Fibre Channel logo. And then they took the Ethernet logo, which I recall seeing on the back of my Dell desktop, and they put them together, and that's the Fibre Channel over Ethernet logo. All the cool stuff has logos. So why would you use it apart from the fact that it's got a cool logo? Okay, because iSCSI don't have a logo. I should have put that as a con.
No logo.
Well, guess what? If you've got a lot of fiber channel, and most people do, then you might want to use have some way of making better use of it. You might want to bridge that to all of these new servers. Maybe you've got Cisco UCS. That's a really good reason to use fiber channel over Ethernet. Maybe you really do want to consolidate on Ethernet, and you don't want to buy iSCSI licenses or iSCSI arrays. Okay, I'll give you that. That makes some sense. So if you've got the installed base, if you've got the skills, as my friend Greg Farrow said, if you really want to use fiber channel, then I guess you could use it. Anybody else is probably not going to want to use it. Of course, he's a networking guy, so you know how those people are. FCOE is incremental. Not incremental like iSCSI is incremental, where you can just literally like replace a cable or a switch or a NIC or whatever, and everything just kind of works. But it's incremental in that you don't actually have to pull everything out and put everything new in. You can literally put, you know, an FCOE switch and start small and just kind of bridge a little bit of your SAN, and then eventually you can kind of cut in some more. And when finally some vendor comes out with an array and a switch that works as an end-to-end device, then you can actually transition over to it. So eventually you could have an end-to-end FCOE network, and you could have done it incrementally, which is a big change from the past, when, you know, literally it's forklift things out. So that's a good-ish reason. Again, if you love fiber channel and you wanna move forward. If you want to use some of the virtualization capabilities, again, most of the advanced work right now in terms of mobility and flexibility for like VMware is done really focusing on this guy. Because the vendors are really pushing this hard. So this is why you might want to use fiber channel over Ethernet. By the way, I haven't submitted this. This presentation is not on your thumb drive. So you're just out of luck. But we'll give it to you later. So that's why. So who's pushing it? And why are they pushing it? Got me. But I think Cisco's pushing it because Cisco loves Ethernet. They wouldn't have gone into fiber channel if they didn't have to, if they didn't want to, you know, smell blood over there. Man, that was the best thing that ever happened to Brocade, wasn't it? If Cisco hadn't entered the fiber channel market, Brocade still would be fighting with McData. Now they're sitting on a gold mine. Brocade sees it as a way to knock off Cisco because, again, it's not E, it's FC over E, and Brocade knows all about the FC stuff. So Brocade really wants to knock Cisco. And they want to have somebody to buy their foundry switches, so they might like it. QLogic, Emulex, Broadcom, go talk to these guys and ask them why they like FCOE, and they'll tell you why they're better than QLogic, Emulex, or Broadcom, whichever one they aren't, because they've got all these great features, and our stuff is so much better than theirs, and they all love to hate Intel, too. Intel, if you ask Intel, you know what they're doing with networking, converged networks right now? So these guys, QLogic, Emulex, and Broadcom, are putting more and more power onto the chip, onto the card, so that they can offload the CPU. Do you think Intel wants to offload the CPU? No, they want to onload the CPU. So Intel's actually removing their hardware acceleration and coming up with technologies that just throw more data onto the CPU. Why would they do that? Well, you know, I think I can figure that one out. NetApp thinks their unified storage message works in a fiber channel over Ethernet world. And considering they're the only ones who support end-to-end fiber channel over Ethernet that I know of, I think they have a point. You know, EMC and HDS, well, they rule fiber channels. So, of course, they're wanting to have some future because if NetApp runs away with this market, well, they're not going to like that. And then the server guys, what do they care? They don't even love fiber channel anyway. It's like, why am I even living with you? You know? So they just as soon move with something else. I mean, like I say, most of these guys are already... They already have alternative approaches anyway. Most of these guys already love iSCSI. So they're, oh, okay, if you guys want to go with fiber channel over Ethernet, I'll do it. So here's my reality check, and unfortunately it's a load of cons. You might do it if you've, again, as Greg said, if you love fiber channel, then you might love fiber channel over Ethernet. Greg also said anyone stupid enough to love fiber channel would love fiber channel over Ethernet. So... It might be cheaper or faster than fiber channel. We got to put a star. This is one of those things that that they're going to say, oh, it's 10 gigabit. Oh, it doesn't have the expensive HBA. You know, oh, you can run it over cheap Ethernet switches. Well, you know what happens if you run fiber channel over Ethernet, over a cheap HBA, over a cheap Ethernet switch at 10 gigabits? It goes about 1 gigabit. Because honestly, most Ethernet switches can't handle this, and you need a special switch, and you need a special HBA. And at the end of the day, it actually right now costs a little more, in my opinion, than fiber channel anyway. But eventually, it might be cheaper, because they are trying to leverage commodity, you know, economies of scale. All the cool kids are talking about it. They're all doing it. You know, if they said jump off a bridge, would you? Why not do it? Well, because it doesn't really exist yet. I mean, it does exist, and it can work, and the bug fests prove that FCOE exists, but it doesn't completely exist. The whole thing doesn't exist. 8 gig fiber channel is pretty fast. That's another reason not to do FCOE, because 8 gig fiber channel exists and is rock solid, and it actually costs about the same as 4 gig fiber channel, so why wouldn't you just do that if you love fiber channel? You know, end-to-end FCOE, well, that's not a problem. We're not going to be able to do that anyway. And it's unproven. You know, so I can see why I would like maybe want to look at it, but I'm not going to use this right now. And like I say, unless I've got like a Cisco UCS or like an EMC V-block or something like that, then I might want to consider FCOE, but most of the case, not so much. Then there's the other white meat. Anybody remember this guy? Who hates NFS? Come on, don't be shy. I hate NFS. I've been hating it since version 2. I bet some of you have been hating it longer than me. Well, you know what? NFS version 4 fixes all those problems. It fixes some of those problems. It fixes none of those problems. Oh, you dash my hopes. My hopes and dreams. Nobody's really using this. It was ratified in, like 5 years ago or something. And the vendors support it. There's drivers and stuff like that. I mean, there are some positives, right? I mean, some positives. It's not, like, cobbled together out of stone knives and bearskins. It's actually one protocol with, like, a few commands instead of 15 protocols with 8,000 commands. That's pretty good. No UDP. You gotta love to not have UDP anymore. You know, it's got integrated encryption. It's got all sorts of good stuff. The problem with me, my big problem with NFS version 4 is NFS version 4.1. PNFS. You know, if ever there was a camel of a protocol, it's PNFS. It's like, you know, and I had a good long talk with one of the NetApp guys, Alex, if you're watching, this is for you. And he was kind of, sort of trying to defend PNFS, saying, well, it kind of, well, he's Scottish and he was wearing a kilt. He literally was wearing a kilt at the moment, which made it really hard to have this conversation. Dude, you're in a kilt. And, it kind of makes some sense, you know. It should make some, yeah, it should, okay, maybe, but, oh my God. Wait, NFS has block storage? And object storage? Who thought of this? Clearly somebody who loves SAN file systems. I didn't say it's the bastard child of SAN file systems and NFS, but you can fill in the blank. There's another big problem with PNFS too, along with the fact that somebody decided that it should do everything, including block and object storage. The other big problem is that PNFS, the spec, the NFS 4.1 spec, actually only includes this thing down here on the left, this metadata exchange. Nothing else is in the spec. So if you actually want to do anything with it, you're using proprietary non-standard stuff. For example, if you get a PNFS client and you try to attach it, you know, to a block PNFS, well, guess what? It's not going to work. You should probably know these things. The file stuff is standardized because PNFS with file transfers uses NFS. And NFS works, sort of. And you can actually have a clustering situation. So PNFS basically says, I'm going to have multiple data servers out here and one metadata server. And you ask the metadata server where your data is, and then you can go ahead and communicate with multiple servers. So it's like a scale-out approach. And that makes some sense for file access. And in fact, I think it makes a lot of sense for file access. I think this is actually a really pretty good idea. What is not, well, as logical to me, is why do you want it to be able to give you a block map and tell you to go access something over SCSI? Why do you want to give it an object identifier and tell it to access an object over iSCSI? I mean, what were they thinking? So this is another protocol over Ethernet. And theoretically, it would be good over data center bridging. But when I tweeted that today, people were like, ooh, that's a good idea. People who should have known better, who should have maybe considered running PNFS over data center bridging, were like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess we could do that. So basically, nobody had even thought about running it over these enhanced protocols. Anyway, so that's PNFS. So why would you really want to do any of this stuff? Well, this is a sysadmin conference. And I was a sysadmin once. And so I know that there's different flavors of you, bitter, sour. Some of you are more server people, right? Who's server people? You know, you don't need to raise your hand. Yes, you do. No, you don't. So some of you are server managers. Some of you are more networky, and some of you are more storagey. I pity the fool. And each of you is going to get something different out of converged storage over converged networking in some sort. You know, the server guys actually are the ones who win everything. Because what they get is they get to actually not care as much about storage anymore. And again, I started out as a server guy who had to care about storage, and that's when my path to the dark side happened. So really, I'm all for anything that has people not thinking about storage. You get better support for a lot of the stuff that you love, like blades, and not so much caring about fiber channel switches and HBAs. You could get better overall performance, especially if you're using, you know, 10 gig Ethernet. You network guys, you get all the headaches. You basically get to learn a whole new world of protocols that really are a pain for you. Eventually, they'll be good, and you'll love them, trust me, except maybe Trill. But the protocols that you have to learn, all this new data center bridging extensions and everything, you probably don't want to learn these things, and you've got to. Good. You do have some work tools, though. You can segment your network up a little bit. You can maybe not have somebody gripe when this application is blocking that application, because you can actually set up different queues to control that. And you get to deal with all that nonsense storage networking stuff that we storage guys have been dealing with. Storage guys, you lose. Really, I mean, basically everything outside the array is suddenly taken from you in this kind of world. And in fact, it's going pretty far. Some of the coolest products in the VMware space and in the Hyper-V space, yes, the Microsoft product, Hyper-V, some of the coolest products are totally integrated storage environments that allow the storage to just automatically configure itself and do all sorts of cool stuff. You've got VAAI, you've got vCenter integration, you've got companies like Versto doing all this really cool storage integration stuff that basically makes storage easy to use, which means the storage guy doesn't have anything to do. Which means that maybe the storage guy should focus on the real problem in storage, which is the fact that people write stuff, they never read it, and they never delete it. And so if you're a storage guy, you probably should be championing converged storage over converged networking, because it means that you might actually get out of the weeds and do something more interesting, something more relevant to the business, like actually managing data, instead of trying to keep fiber channel SANs and storage arrays working. So I said that basically it takes things away from you, because it does. It takes away all the obnoxious stuff. It gives it to the network guy, and you don't like him anyway, so give it to him. So here's a counterpoint, though. Why use Ethernet at all? We talked a lot about all these protocols and things that we have to add. Why should we use Ethernet at all? Why shouldn't we use InfiniBand? It already does all these things, and it's faster, too. You know, if you really look at it, it makes a lot more sense than fiber channel over Ethernet, or data center bridging, or 10 gig Ethernet, or 40 gig Ethernet, because it's already faster. And it already exists, and it's supported, and everybody who's got any real power behind their storage network is already using InfiniBand. It's kind of pricey. It's kind of a new network. But did you notice that Fibre Channel is kind of pricey and kind of totally insane as well? You might as well use something that's fast and insane instead of something that's lagging behind. But what about something else? Why not try something else entirely? Wouldn't it have been awesome to have Token Ring? I mean, wouldn't it have been so cool to be able to run? Because it is already lossless, and the packet sizes match up. So I'm trying to start a groundswell of support for Fibre Channel over Token Ring. It wasn't my idea. But we've got some strong support deep within the bowels of Cisco, Brocade, IBM, HP. Seriously. And if you guys want to show your support, I also have a little thing here. I brought a bag of tokens. I do have to say, if you let them drop on the floor, it's a pain because you have to have an election to see who gets to pick it up. But if you would like a token, you can show your support. I've also submitted a talk for Storage Networking World to propose, formally propose Fibre Channel over Token Ring. And I think that if they have any humor at all, which they don't, they will allow me to come to their April meeting, no kidding, and talk about Fibre Channel over Token Ring. So I'm right there with you. So this is my conclusion. As much as I like to knock it, and as much as I've said here, I mean, is there anybody here who seriously think that Ethernet is not going to win? Except this guy who has InfiniBand? Seriously, I mean, there is no chance that Ethernet will not be the future of networking. There is no chance at all that Ethernet will not take over storage networking as well. Eventually, Fibre Channel over Ethernet will work fine. Hopefully, by then, we will have given up on it. But eventually, it will work fine. Eventually, these data center bridging extensions will be specified. And DCBX will have something to talk about when it says, do you support this? Because right now, when it says that, the other guy says no. But in the future, maybe the other guy will say yes. And hopefully, we won't ever have Trill. And if you want to know why, ask your networking guy. So, which protocol? iSCSI? It's going to grow. iSCSI is only about 20% of the market right now. It will grow. It will flourish. It will probably never take over from Fibre Channel. Well, no, I don't want to say never. It will probably not take over from Fibre Channel for a really long time. Fibre Channel? Yeah, FCOE is eventually going to work, and it's eventually going to migrate people off of Fibre Channel protocol. So if you're planning on 32 gig Fibre Channel really taking the market by storm, you know, 8 gig probably, 16 gig. Remember when I said that Brocade, the best thing that ever happened to them is Cisco? Because Brocade is sitting on a gold mine. They're going to probably mine $10 billion of Fibre Channel equipment over the next 10 years as all this stuff wanes. I mean, it's basically IBM's mainframe, except instead of IBM, it's Brocade. And they've got a gold mine. And Cisco's eventually going to give up competing. And that leaves who? QLogic? And Brocade's going to pull tons and tons and tons of money out of the biggest enterprises in the world for many years to come. So Fibre Channel is not dead. But eventually, FCOE will take over. NFS, I really don't know. Is anyone here using NFS v4? This guy's kind of like, yeah, he doesn't even want to admit to it. You know, it looks pretty good. But I don't know anybody who's using it. And it's been around for a little while now. And then the PNFS stuff, if you hear the vendors, they are all talking about PNFS. In fact, they're talking about it even more than they talk about Fibre Channel over Ethernet right now. But I remember them talking about cloud storage, too. You remember that? And how'd that work out for you? You know? Well, some people are using it. I spent a year in a cloud storage company, and I discovered that there are actually really good applications for it. But it's not going to really take over the world, and EMC was never going to make billions on Atmos. So that's where you got. You know, basically, unfortunately, being a pragmatist, I got to say we got more of the same. We've got iSCSI growing. We've got Fibre Channel continuing dominance. We've got NFS still being NFS, the crazy cousin that nobody loves. And it's all over Ethernet. That's that. So thank you. thank you for attending my session. I really do have tokens to give out. And also, I want to point out, we've got this Tech Field Day thing that basically is a, it's like an independent, upside-down, backwards press tour, except it's people who don't work for companies and aren't professionals getting briefed and then talking back and saying, well, that sucks and stuff like that. So we're going to be streaming it live if you go to techfieldday.com. And I'd love to hear from anybody else. So thank you, guys. Who's got a question? Anybody have a question? Well, don't look at me because I don't have the answer, but you might have a question for each other. Anybody? Come on.
Where will your slides be?
Oh, where will my slides be? That's the... They'll be on the Lisa 10 website. I was working on them on the airplane. So they were a little late. But there you go. Yeah. You look familiar. Do I know you?
Possible.
Possible. Maybe. Okay. Oh, microphone. Get up and use the microphone, dude. All right.
So storage over Ethernet's great, but you know, I buy these Brocade DCX switches, hugely dense 48-port blades, super fast backplanes. I just don't see a lot of products like that out there with for 10 gigabit Ethernet in the market. 10 gigabit Ethernet, I'm lucky to get, you know, 24 ports on one switch.
Well, the density is getting better. I recommend taking a look at what Force 10 and Arista have. Mm-hmm. They've got some pretty cool things. And Arista, I'm sorry, Doug, you told me not to say anything, has future very dense and inexpensive switches. And so, yeah, they're... Take a look at them before you say, because you're right, because most 10 gig switches are ridiculously expensive and has like two ports, and that's not really helping anyone.
Right.
But basically what's happening is Broadcom specifically is coming up with new silicon that has ridiculous numbers of ports. Another thing that's been holding it back is power. 10G based T has been a real nightmare. Like I say, back in the day with fast Ethernet, everybody was saying, well, you know, you'll never be able to push 100 megabits over copper. Well, then we had, you'll never be able to push a gigabit over copper. And now we've got, you're never going to be able to push 10 gigabits over copper. And they were kind of right for a while because the power demands were just ridiculous. You know, I mean, we're talking, you know, tens or even maybe 100 watts per port. I mean, that's never going to happen. But they're getting it down to the point where they're going to have a couple watt ports for copper, and that's going to drive the prices way, way down. Or you can just switch to optical finally. Who's going to do that? Nobody. But that's okay. If you want to build out in the future, you can switch to optical, and then everything works as it is. It's still a little pricey, but I think you're right. Another thing to think about, too, is that a lot of these Ethernet switches really don't have the intestinal fortitude to pass massive amounts of traffic. I mean, fiber channel switches are built basically full-on non-blocking. Ethernet switches generally are oversubscribed, which means that if you try to put them to use, like my D-Link switch, I've got a gigabit D-Link switch, and literally the thing just dies. I mean, it just can't do anything because it has like no, you know, it has nothing to it. So you gotta think about that too. You gotta think about how much power there is in the Ethernet switch. But eventually it's all gonna happen. I mean, it needs to happen. They're already going to 40 and 100. I mean, that already exists, so it's going to happen. Thank you. Hello.
So how can we help you with the growth of fiber channel over token?
Say it loud, brother.
And
yes.
I work at Cisco.
We can say, what? Yeah, we can say, because fiber channel over token ring really does make as much sense as fiber channel over Ethernet. And that's sad, isn't it? And yet, we're doing one of them. So really, why not do both of them? I mean, come on, people. You know? So, what can you do? Not a lot, but we can have fun with it. You know? At least we have something to laugh about as we implement fiber channel over Ethernet. We can say, boy, wouldn't it have been nice? So. All right. Anybody else? Hey, well, thanks, Lisa. Thanks for inviting me in. Yeah, again, Amy's been asking me to come in, and I'm really glad that I finally did. You guys are awesome. You got the storage joke. People in the storage industry don't get the storage joke. You're just not funny. So I appreciate that at least. Actually, what time is it? Oh, actually, we've got a couple minutes here. Before you go, I just want to tell you a funny story. You can leave if you want. You don't have to hear my funny story. So I was speaking at a storage conference. I already told this to you. I was speaking at a storage conference, and there's these guys that come in, and they were like bearded and sandaled and stinky and stuff. And we're like laughing. We're like, oh man, those must be sysadmins. And one of the guys was, oh, no, those can't be. Those guys, they smell too bad. What are they doing? They must be homeless guys or something like that. You know, what are they doing in the storage conference? And yet they were asking questions. They had press passes. So we're thinking, who are these guys? Turned out they were homeless guys who just go to conferences for fun. And and they literally do this. And this is they get free food. I mean, why not? You get free food, free beer, you get a T-shirt. I mean, that's why I'm here. And they're smart enough that they don't have to do anything to get it. So the next year, they were there again. So there we go. There we go. So so I'm looking at all of you, and none of you guys are, no, I think you all belong here. I think you're probably sysadmins, actually. So thanks, guys. All right. Get your token.